Hello, we'd like to welcome you back to the Saturn Earth Connection with Michael from Maui and the Cassini spacecraft near Saturn as a tourist sending back digital postcards of the sites. Our website is helloearth.info, and this is hour 66. Today is the 18th of November, 2008. Aloha, Michael.
Aloha. Yes, I say aloha to everyone out there.
Yes, good to hear from you.
Especially you regulars and curiosity seekers, and of course. Fill your mind with the reality that is going to be breaking open to this world eventually. It's not going to be very long from now. A reality that we're not alone. And we have to come to certain agreements about our state of affairs on our planet because of that.
Yeah, and just recently, Friday, November 14th, that mystery glow of Saturn.
Yes, I saw that right away. It was news. Cassini sent back that photo. That shot of Saturn's aurora. Yes. And it's interesting because a lot of the scientists felt that Saturn or the planets farther out, much further, like Saturn, Uranus, just going up further and further out, would not, even Jupiter, would not have auroras because of the idea of the inverse square law, kind of the sun being, you know, so far away and the radiation from the sun becoming so much weaker, you know, as you go further and further out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, they are quite surprised at its being there. And also, what's interesting, you can, if you go and look it up, I don't know if you're going to put a link on it, to it, for this particular podcast, but...
Oh, I should. I should put a link on the top of... the NASA page.
It's an interesting thing, and there's the hexagonal storm that's going on, which, by the way, is a pattern that would develop anyway if you were to look at a moving electric motor around its stator or its field, depending how it was wound. You would see some organization in magnetic field, and it would have somewhat interesting sides to it like that. And Saturn has got my own scientists knowing that it's got not a dipole field like Earth has, but a toroidal magnetic field, and that it's also has different peculiar reactions that are not like Earth's dipole field. With Earth's dipole field, it is prone to shifts. Of course, we've heard about magnetic pole shifts and magnetic pole reversals. And of course, we depend upon polar shifts and magnetic shifts in order to make electricity, or to, you know, start the flow of electricity, or to use it in electric motors. And that's very, very important for that function. And Earth in itself has got a lot of iron, got a lot of ferrous metals, as well as other things that are very magnetic, that are giving Earth that particular dipole field. But Saturn's toroidal field is... interesting because it is more immune to polar shifts because the pole continuously moves, actually, chasing itself around. And but what is interesting is the aurora, the actual visible aurora. I used to like looking at the old mercury vapor rectifiers blowing away high voltage transmitter power supplies that had these old mercury vapor tubes. Later on, of course, they went silicon. And once they went dead, there was nothing exciting to look at, mm-hmm. except maybe some regulator tubes. But the ones that we see all the time are fluorescent lights. And they're the same, basically, the same idea. Of course, Tesla was the one who first demonstrated that fluorescence and versus incandescence using the same principle. But what is interesting about what is happening there is I don't think the scientists are wrong in thinking that Saturn is, you know, too far from the sun for this to happen. But what they haven't considered is that we're now moving into the ecliptic plane of our galaxy. And that is a very powerful zone of cosmic radiation. Last week we were talking about different types of cosmic radiation and particles, as well as fields and energy fields that are protecting the New Jerusalem and that's moving around Saturn. And they told me about fields and energies that not only emanate from the sun, but come from far out in distant space. Now, this is something that we can now observe. By Saturn being so far away, we are now observing something that is causing this effect. It is, our sun is in a quiescent period, and essentially there's no storms on it that are causing sunspots. So something is happening. In other words, something is coming in that is looking at our low pressure sun and showering our area with energy. And that is showing up on Saturn right now, and it is visible. And nobody really wants to stick their neck out and say what it is, but I'll just stick my neck out and tell you what I put together, two and two together, from being there, being with celestials, and being able to have them sort of like educate me in some of the things that were happening over there, and come up with this basis of idea. And interestingly enough, we're looking toward something that is supposed to happen somewhat. Something is supposed to be coming toward us in terms of time. We're marching toward it in the near future, which is something called the pole shift or pole reversal. And our magnetic field, which is dipole, which isn't shielded from, you know, type of possibility. It may move, our north may move, you know, many thousands of miles, or it may actually reverse, where north becomes south and south becomes north. And along with that, you have some dynamic forces that take place. This pole shift is something that is even warned about in our Bible, the Holy Bible. And some of these prophets are real characters, because they had telepathic insight in some of these things, and they didn't understand many times. They just repeated, and I'm trying to do the very much very, very close to the same thing as repeat what I have experienced or seen. But I'll point out to you, and this comes in this old segment of archaic, the archaic part of the Bible, which is very old. It's in a section called Zechariah chapter 14. And it talks about this latter time which we're in right now, which in geopolitical, geofinancial, as well as the geologic age of the earth is going to go through some upheavals and changes. We've seen some financial upheavals, which is worldwide, which, by the way, is only first of two that are to happen. This is the first one, and there's a second one coming, which, of course, will be worse than the first. as far as the geologic is another thing that we're looking at. In Zechariah chapter 14, starting from around verse 5, we see some of the verses. I'll read them here. He says, "You will flee by my mountain valley, for it will extend to Azel. You will flee as you fled from the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah." In other words, you're saying, well, as in the earthquake, and they're giving them a time. Mm-hmm. Well, it must have been a pretty bad earthquake during that particular time. But of course, an indication is that we are having lots of earthquakes. We just had another pretty strong one from Indonesia. And we're moving into more of these, which are also talked about in the New Testament, in which Jesus Christ talked about the time close to his coming, which we're pointing out as earthquakes. And then continues and says, "Then the Lord my God will come, and all his holy ones with him." Now, the Lord my God will come. He's talking about the universal ruler. And all the holy ones with him are those that are essentially doing his bidding. For us who are functioning here, that term holy probably has a lot to do with our attunement to the thought adjuster. Thought adjuster allows us to become essentially functioning in concert with the Holy One, God himself, because he is God. So all his holy ones are all those who are adjuster, a thought adjuster implanted and attuned, not just having the thought adjuster, but attuned to the adjuster. Adjuster will give us hints and actually show us, sometimes lead us right into the events that are about to happen and says, look, these things must happen. And these things are now happening. And right now these things are showing up. And we'll see signs in the heavens, according to the New Testament kind of things. And these heavens, Cassini is a great eyeball in the sky right there at Saturn. We also got the Hubble. But one of these things is that, why? Why are these things happening? Well, I've given you some idea of why these things are happening and also how they associate themselves to ancient and very archaic prophecy. And going even more into the description of the actual pole shift that happens. You know, it's right here in the Old Testament of the Bible, the Holy Bible. It is an actual description of what happens in a pole shift. And this has been described by others who have theorized on what a pole shift would have been like. And it says, "On that day, there will be no light, no cold, or frost." The big weather changes. There is going to be some changes in the Earth's rotation. Now it goes on and it says, "It will be a unique day." In other words, this day doesn't happen over and over, repeat like all of our regular days. It's a very special day. "It will be a unique day without daytime or nighttime, a day known to the Lord." In other words, the ones who said known to the Lord, if we go back to, we call a thought adjuster the Lord, or we can call the celestials the Lord, because they are the little gods, the Elohim, the small gods, the gods from the Anunnaki, the ones from heaven who come down to earth, or you know those that I were with, you might call them the little gods. In other words, they have a lot of information. And you have a lot of good science and a lot of ability to look at things and to move. They're so far ahead of us, it's unbelievable how far ahead they are in their technology. And it says that day is known to the Lord. And next sentence says, "Is when evening comes, there will be light." In other words, something went absolutely wrong. And it's a night, should be night now, but it's daytime. Now, this describes a pole shift. So you can see that if, you know, you had a pole shift on a motor, all of a sudden it begins to rotate. And they say, well, the motor rotates. Well, something happens on our Earth if we have a pole shift. And there will be other things that happen, like tremendous movements and tidal influences. It said every mountain will flee away, and the islands will flee away. All these kinds of things about, you know, coastal events. We already know that something has tripped. I remember collecting recently a Native Hawaiian plant off of the that was collected off the world's tallest sea cliffs on the north shore of Molokai. And geologically, long run-out landslides go miles out, or the cliff at one time was a soft slope. And whatever caused those long run-out landslides, and these landslides just like, it's as if the entire half of the island fell into the sea. And if you go to the island of Molokai and you just cruise by and look up at those cliffs, you say, what happened to all the rest of the mountain? It's not here. I'm on my boat running through here, looking straight up, thousands of feet up a cliff. One time it was all a mountain, and it just disappeared. And a lot of the scientists will tell you off the record, yeah, it happened real quick. But on the record, they don't really know how to classify it, how fast it happened. But it's pretty much proven to many of them in their mind, and in some of them in their papers, that these kinds of long run-out landslides happen instantaneously, just over a short period of time. And something causes them. Some kind of great geologic force that is much more powerful than a normal earthquake. So this is the kind of things that have happened before, and we're looking for them to happen again. And then we're looking for indicators. So pay attention to that Saturn aurora and realize what the celestials told me, that we're got some effects coming in from deep space, and not just from the sun. In fact, the sun is not acting very, very lively right now. As a ham radio operator, I'm kind of like, well, you know, not having much fun with the long distance communication or the ionosphere, because it's not getting whacked by the sun a lot, so then you charge up.
This mysterious glow from Saturn, this is, I mean, the word glow, there is illumination there.
There is a luminous, luminous.
But not
glow
from,
to it. Yeah.
But not from the sun.
It is being generated by an ionized field. And it's not solar wind. It is another kind of force. One that we are going through right now as we move through the ecliptic plane right now. And supposedly we're getting awfully close. It's only a few years away. I think something could happen that could cause a very dynamic force, which is the pole shift. Saturn won't have a pole shift because its pole isn't really dipolar. And our planet happens to have a dipole magnetic field.
Well, for our planet to have a pole shift, wouldn't a, just to produce an electromagnet,
yes,
you have to complete the circuit.
Yes.
So something's going to have to switch it.
Some other force is going to have
to be connected to us to flip us.
Right, right.
So what could possibly come from where to connect that, or I'll just say complete the circuit?
Well, it's not a circuit. It's, you know, technically it's really an interaction of forces and fields. electromagnetic, and probably related very strongly to electromagnetic.
It still has to be.
Forces.
It still has to be connected to make it work. Whether
via,
it's
via the stream of field
the
of
stream of
energy. What is interesting is that their craft, the craft that they use, have left at one spot in the, my backyard and nothing grows. And I told you I put the compass in. My dad actually just went down there.
Yes.
He never confirmed that, you know, anything special happened. He just wanted to do it and show me something. He never told me, oh, you know, it's because there was a spaceship or there was some strange light out there. No, he just said, Michael, let's go take a look at this spot here. Put his compass in there, and the compass went basically dead, you know. You could shake it around, and it wouldn't end up pointing north.
If you moved it out of that area where the...
It worked again, yeah.
It worked again?
Yeah. Which is like it had some kind of block of... blocking of
yes,
magnetic
energy. It blocked it.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's... Have you gone down there with a compass since then?
I should. I actually should have a compass right 2 feet away from me and see what happens. I think it would probably work again. But it was only a few days later when that was done. But I'll go after this, I'll go down and if it's not raining anymore, I'll go down and put a compass in there.
All right, we can put it on hold and you can do it now.
Actually, it's kind of mushy out there. It's kind of wet.
Oh, because yeah. It's been a long time since your dad did that.
Yeah, it's very long.
I mean, you were how old when he did that?
I think about 19, yeah.
About 19, so that's a bunch of years ago.
It's a bunch of years ago, right.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the magnetic fields, they knock off your car. I remember there was a time in which, strangely, you know, I driving down the road and everything just went dead, you know. And it happened, you know. And, another car came driving by and his engine was running and I said, wait, let me start it up. And it started right up like nothing happened. But it could have been a field there that was knocking me down, you know. Hmm. And when the other guys came, it ran away, you know, it moved away. And these kinds of fields can be very strong. Oh, by the way, I got that magnetic, what is it called?
Oh, it's called the magnetic pulsar?
Magnetic pulsar. I put it on my knee. And it had some positive results, so it ended up seemingly to make my knee a little bit more flexible, less, and the pain went away a little bit. So for the arthritic knee, it sort of helped out, but I don't have these other kinds of problems with my lymphatic system or anything. But anyway, it was interesting, you know, playing with that pulsar, and it is strong. That magnetic field is something I don't know, I would have to work a while to make one like that. It is something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you have to, after you have it for a while and put some light bulbs on the other side of your hand or...
Well, probably I could make an LED or detector, you know, a little circuit, easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
Make a loop and let it cut the field, cut the wire, see how much, mm-hmm. you know.
Michael?
EMF, electromagnetic force it generates in that wire, enough to...
Yeah, Michael's talking about a soda instrument called the magnetic pulsar that he just received recently.
Yeah, it's for health, you know.
And it throws out a magnetic field into your body.
Yeah. So we know, you know, just by playing around with magnets, I mean, it's one of the most fun things when you're a little kid, playing around with a magnet, you know.
Mm-hmm, even now.
Yeah, but this pulsar is an electromagnet of immense power, peak power, you know, just for a short period of time, short time, bang, it hits you with a heart.
Big blast of power. Yeah.
And it perturbs something, you know.
Do you, I suppose you don't feel anything, but I'll ask you, do you feel anything? I
Oh,
mean,
yeah.
do you feel the
Actually, I was
pulse?
surprised that I, well, actually felt the pulsar itself, which shouldn't jump, does jump.
Oh.
And I could feel it click inside of the paddle. So I said, whoa, this thing is much more powerful than, you know, because there's nothing ferrous close by when it was doing that. You know, so I guess you might say, affected by the our own Earth field. You know, what else could, there's no ferrous metal close by, what else could make it, you know, twitch a bit, you know, unless I got metal in my kneecap or something, but iron is fair.
I hope not.
Well, you know, people have had a lot of things like that, but there's a very, very small amounts of it in water, too. You drink a lot of iron. But anyway, our blood has got lots of iron in it, so it could be that, too.
This, getting back a little bit to this mysterious glow of Saturn.
Right.
If, all right, well, when you read the article, you don't really know too much. They don't know what it is, and they're not going to say what they think it may be. So it's just a bunch of interesting conversation about something very unusual out on the southern pole of Saturn.
Right, and it is something that is happening now. I mean, it wasn't there before. So there is something that is approaching, not from our sun. Not solar wind, because the sun is not very energetic. It's coming from the other direction.
That's what I was just going to ask you. Is this coming into the center of our solar system, where we are?
Yeah, it's coming from, yeah, exactly.
Okay, now here's what I was thinking. If this glow is happening on Saturn, what do you think will happen on Earth when it arrives here, if it's arriving? Because something made this happen on Saturn.
I'm not sure. There are different things that can happen because out there, there was no interaction with the sun's field, you know, at all. Much solar energy, you know, the inverse square rule of the energy just, you know, gets really diminished as you move square of the distance. You know, it's just one of the things. It's just how weak it gets going out there. So it may have been very easy to start up. You know, it's sort of like a brand new fluorescent bulb. You know, it starts up nice and easy, but as time goes on, its internal resistance gets higher. It starts getting a hard time to start up. You know. And our aurora, maybe. I think our aurora is active right now. In fact, I saw someone's recent picture of some really nice aurora fields that they were picturing up north. So I think our aurora is very active right now also. I'm not sure, but I guess we could find out.
Well, have you seen these cameras that take these, like, you go to a health fair and there's a booth there with someone with a camera and they say, well, for so many dollars, we'll take a photograph of you and you can see your aurora around your body? Have you seen those photographs?
It's like that Kersian photography or something?
Yes, I can.
Static field type photography.
Yes, and some people have a huge field around them, and
well,
some people
it's
don't.
It's very interesting, you know,
not as much.
How they take a leaf and they cut a piece of it off, and then they take a picture of it under the energized field, and it shows the exact shape of the leaf, but even with a part of the leaf missing. and that is all the kinds of things that are you know. That are there, and they're evidence of our spirituality, spirit, you know. Spirit is in everything, but we have an additional element, which is construct of our eternal vehicle, our soul, actually, which can be imported and moved around.
So, too bad we didn't have another Cassini-type spacecraft on the outer planets beyond Saturn, because if we would have seen this happen, let's say, 25, 50 years ago, we'd sort of know how long it would take until it would get here.
Well, fields like that would, of course, move at, you know, at least at the speed of light. So, you know.
If that's what it is.
Yeah, if that is moving in any kind of... But if it's moving as particle energy, it could be much slower.
Do you think your alien friends out there are just illuminating Saturn to light it up so it looks pretty?
No.
No.
Mm-hmm. I think it is something that they were aware of going to happen, and they're more than ready to function in an environment like that. And Earth needs to be prepared. So I just gave you some indication that celestials have been warning us, even back in the days of Zechariah. And Zechariah was a prophet in the Old Testament, so 3,000 years ago or so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And describing these kinds of things, and I'm going, And that happens to coincide with the time in which they feel that, and I'm talking about the celestials themselves, feel that it would be the opportune time in which to show themselves, too.
Oh.
You know, if you go with that vision of the great armada of ships that, you know, came a little bit more, more and more and more, until there was just this huge armada of ships. This ties in with that scripture which says right here, in which, and then the Lord my God will come and all his holy ones with him. So this is the Old Testament version of my vision that was given to me. Mine's been updated because it actually shows the ships, their different shapes, their functions, their movement, and their numbers increasing into a crescendo. And this undoubtedly real, undoubtedly cannot, it would not be something that would be missed and say, are UFOs? There's no question, UFO. Are UFOs real? There's not going to be any question about that.
I'll say when there's an armada of ships, thousands are darkening the sky with them, that'll...
the sky didn't get darkened by them, but it just were just so many of them.
Okay.
And what is interesting is that big V-wing craft, one of which we got a little picture from somebody took a picture from the moon of V-wing, and it's been running around. It came around Texas a couple of times. It's been around and all around this world. And it's showing itself, and that's the one that I was so amazed to look at. As we went down onto that deck and to look at the Frondeline, the energy regulator, and an interesting thing about that place was, here we are. We went down, and there was a lone attendant to that place. He was there, and I was walking down there with my guide, myself. So here we are, just three of us, standing on this immense deck, expansive, and a huge, wide, very huge and very wide stairways, and almost like streets or boulevards, very big. But you knew that I knew, and I immediately knew, there must be a lot of people walk through here all of a sudden, you know. And I got a kind of a feel that it's, you know, I went to Shinjuku in Tokyo. It's one of the busiest train stations in the world and saw this particular arrival of a train, and I never seen so many people just come into one place at one time in a massive tidal wave of human bodies, you know, as that place. But that was small. It was, Shinjuku was small compared to where I was. So there's an immense number of people that either being prepared, that place is prepared to handle or happens to handle on a key.
Yeah, I was amazed when you said that about how wide that boulevard was. And
right.
I can just picture a stairway just being able to handle a lot of people all at once, but maybe it
right.
was just for display.
Yeah. You know, and could be that many people are coming in from far reaches of our galaxy, perhaps even others. I suspect those that are coming from the other galaxies are not physical as many of these are. In fact, I didn't go to this one point. I was sitting down there before I met Dana, who was walking with her. I was getting a little bit. I was sitting there alone. I was just told to wait there and sit down, and I was. And I saw these little guys with, you know, they're running around, very busy. They're big eyes, and I knew they were human, and they're humanoid. And I, you know, kind of like, wow, I'm going to stop one of these guys and ask him what's going on. So I stood up, and I grabbed one of them by his hand. And he turned around, and he looked at me, and he said, and I said, what? And he goes, I said, what are you saying? Tell me what's going on to this place. And he goes, I don't even know what you're doing. And I said, what are you saying? I didn't understand much. Basically, just, and then he was sitting right there. And I ended up sitting right there again. And that wasn't very long before the Dano came walking down and he said, you look confused. In other words, he got the message across. He passed along the message. But he sure chatted a bit. And he was, you know, I grabbed his hand. So he's a physical being. You know.
Mm-hmm. Physical being.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that was that must have been some trip. I'm sure if we asked for people to send in their name for a ride on one of those huge vehicles or vessels, there'd be a double line of people wanting to go.
Well,
I'd like to go.
I'm sure there's many being prepared right now in many different ways, not just through the typical religious source, anyway. And again, it all comes down to the fact that the selection is not in our hands. I've been reminded of that more than one time. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, not the end of our world. This pole shift apparently will happen, but it won't end. Of course, it won't end our world. It won't end our society. It'll just give a chance for the great awakening and upstepping of us into that point in which we will be fully integrated into the society in which they function, galactic adventure society they were quite busy about their business.
This pole shift, is this, I mean, when we say pole shift, I think most people would probably just think of 180 degrees, just completely flipping exactly even. Is it going to be even?
I think that those that have done the tests, you know, especially in Hawaii, a lot of the tests have been done in Hawaii because of the recent lava flows, have found, you know, the arrangement of the poles being shifted not always, just a little bit. Sometimes, like you say, 180 degrees.
Mm-hmm. But we could be shifted maybe slightly and not 180?
Oh, yes. Yes.
And is it going to lock in that position, or will it be moving around again?
It is sort of like, you know, saying, is it our engine, our, what gives us our dipole magnetic field, the inner core of our planet moving around a little bit, is it going to stay in the same pattern? But apparently not. The physical movement that will happen in order to have daytime become nighttime, nighttime become daytime, and there's got to be a rotational problem there that will and most likely cause the change even down to the core of our planet. And as a result, we don't know where. It's sort of like saying, you know, let it shift around. It's sort of like roulette, you know, which little number will it fall into?
Well, one thing I don't understand about the pole shift, we've all played with gyroscopes.
Yes.
And
yes.
Gyroscopes are on big ships to hold them steady, and we use gyroscopes quite a bit. Even riding your bicycle down Haleakala, you're going to be, that wheel spins so fast, it isn't like you're going to fall over.
Exactly.
So if our Earth is spinning on its axis, and it's spinning, how could it shift? Because when you take a gyroscope and pull that string out real hard and the thing's spinning real hard, mm-hmm. when you try and move it away from the way it wants to, the position it wants to hold itself into,
right.
it erratically goes in some figure eight pattern. So I was always wondering with this pole shift, how is the Earth, while it's rotating, how is it ever going to flip?
Well, there's going to be some dynamic things going on, you know.
Okay, well, I know.
It depends upon the intensity, I guess, of the shift. There's going to be some awful big changes going on. And, of course, the shift has been plotted somewhat. In different ages, is not necessarily taking place over a very short time, but mm-hmm. taking place over a series of years. But then again, there have been occasions, such as this one being pointed out, which is only within one day. You know, and that is too dynamic, too great of a shift to see no Earth changes at all.
What? I'm sorry, you said to flip in one day?
Well, this the one in the book of Zechariah describes one that happens in a day.
Yeah. In a day. So,
yeah.
In other words, in the morning, the sun's not coming up where it usually comes up. It's coming up somewhere else.
Yes.
And you'll know something happened last night.
Yes.
Could you imagine that all of a sudden seeing shadows in your house a different way in the morning? It's like,
what happened?
Yes. Is my house on a merry-go-round? Did somebody flip it the other way?
I think my first indication of really, you know, world in collision, you know, like, what was his name? Velikovsky, something like that. Yeah. It was one of those books that I picked up, was led to pick up, study a little bit about sudden or catastrophic changes. And then, of course, out of this book of Zechariah, we have another guy named Zechariah that did research on pole shifts, Zechariah Sitchin, and he has indicated events that happened historically that were seen. Like I was saying, I'm Michael from Maui, and Maui is a demigod who has, in the ancient lore, Hawaiian lore, roped the sun and held it in one place so that the people could work all day, you know, and get their job done or something like that. And then he put it in Haleakala, the house of the sun,
The House
of
the Sun.
It's a mountain, right? It means House of the Sun.
It's a huge mountain, over 10,000 feet high.
Yeah.
Above,
it's huge,
at least above the ocean.
Yeah, you can put Manhattan inside of it, no problem, in the caldera. But it is a, what do you call it, ancient lord, describing maybe one of the last pole shifts that happened.
I always wanted to hike down into Haleakala, but I never had anyone to want to hike down there with me.
Well, there are groups that, you know, you can go with.
Oh, get in with a group.
Jump on a horse and you can ride down there.
A horse?
Yeah, they have horses that go in and out, besides walking.
Mm-hmm. But it certainly is
no,
beautiful.
No motorized vehicles.
Oh, no, no motorized vehicles,
yes.
For sure.
Beautiful. Enough. Don't need any of our junk in there.
Madam Paley wouldn't want that. No. But let's switch to Mars for a second.
Okay.
Nicola has a question from Massachusetts. And, you know, with the face on Mars and the city of pyramids, and that five-sided pyramid, and anyway, with all that on Mars, he asked, was Mars a failed experiment?
It was a functional colony, and it wasn't a failed experiment, you might say, but anyway, it's still. Well, I just will give the people a little bit of indication of my ride back from Saturn and what I, you know, was feeling from just simply asking, instead of just going straight home back to Earth, I said, let's go to Mars on the way back. I really wanted verification that I really went to Saturn, my request to go to Mars and then back to Earth would be obliged, and that I would verify it. Well, when I asked that question, there was some strange behavior that went on. In other words, they had to check if that was okay, you know. Okay, this guy wants to go to Mars first, you know.
Uh-oh,
you know. And they came back after checking. They sort of stopped moving a little bit, and they looked at each other, and then they said, okay, and they said, we'll go there. And we went there, and there was, we were orbiting. We're not really orbiting, we didn't go right around, we just sort of stayed quite a ways away. Mars, I could see the entire planet of Mars fill our viewing screen. Viewing port, I guess, mm-hmm. You might say, where they open up and you can see, look around and realize, yes, here we are. I looked at the planet, and it was indeed a red planet, and I had studied Mars from that time from, you know, Earth telescopes and stuff, so I kind of had an idea of what Mars would look like, and it was quite clear, and they had another indication, which was we can't stay here longer, much longer. I got that feeling right there from there. And as they are telepathic beings, I can overhear them, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that indication. There's some things that are still going on over there. So as far as a failed experiment, there may be things that are still going on there. And I certainly did feel like they were not supposed to stay there very long. In other words, any longer they need permission, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever's going on over there is maybe a little bit outside of their jurisdiction. So there may be a failed experiment, maybe a failed civilization, you might say. but still there are activity going on, some things that they didn't want to get involved with. They didn't give me a closer look. All he asked me is, this is enough? Are you convinced that this is Mars?
Oh, yes. Did you see the city of pyramids?
No. I just looked at the surface and the color and the tone of it. And it was pretty much like how, you know, our satellites have gone and looked at. A friend of mine who I used to play with as a kid, he made the little scoop and it went over there, that Martian, what was the name of that probe we sent over there back around then?
Oh, well, the Mars Observer, I was living in Hawaii when it went.
Yeah.
And it was...
His little project was to go design that little scoop. So he did it as an engineer now. But anyway, yeah, he was one of those whiz kids that I used to hang around with at school.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's about all I can say for sure. I don't have historic detail and stuff like that. This is my relaying of what my experience is and of what I felt that was strange. It was strange in the sense that I definitely felt that we couldn't. They didn't want to be there.
But they didn't say no. We can't go to Mars.
No. They obliged my request, and they didn't want to stay there.
Do you think they called ahead and said, everybody clear out for a little while?
Maybe. I don't know. Well, maybe they're unfriendly. So there may be a bunch of unfriendly people, unfriendly aliens there that I don't know anything about, you know, because all I really was involved with was our celestial friends who are friends. And who are, you know, very, very involved with us, you know, they want to see everything work for the best for our human race, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And how long were you there at Mars?
It was about, it seemed like about 10 or 20 seconds, not even a minute.
Oh, really?
Very short. Just here it is. Look at it. You can't stay here long. Take a good observation.
So it wasn't a flyby. I mean, you literally stopped.
Oh, we stopped. Yeah, we stopped right there.
And you stopped
looked
for
down on the surface. And they let me see it. They let me see us move away.
I'm sorry. What?
They let me see our departure. Before everything went, you know, I guess, to black again, where I can see.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah, so Mars got small, and then, we're going, boom, and then next thing you know, yeah, we're at Earth. Yeah. I don't know how their stuff works. I think it's transdimensional, kind of dimensional shift or something. I don't know how they... But I remember asking about the asteroid field, asteroid belt.
Mm-hmm.
If we were going to crash into any of those asteroids, and it says, oh, there's no problem, we go right around it. No, it's not really around it in terms of a physical three-dimensional move around, you know. So from there I got a hint that they must be talking about some other dimensional movement around it, one more than the third dimension around it, you know. So
well, isn't this astral belt that is supposed to keep us from even going to the moon?
What do you mean? That's not even in the way for us to go to the moon.
I know. Well, some of the things I read, it says, oh, it's impossible to go to the moon because of this.
Oh, you mean a long time ago.
All this debris there, yes, that we'll never get through that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a long time ago.
But the idea of solid particles just banging into them, you know. And I was thinking about, you know, man, we weren't really going really fast because it didn't take me long to get here to Saturn. That really was another thought.
I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but I had a book about, it was printed in the early 60s, like 61. And one of the photographs in it showed one of our astronauts in a spacesuit, and the spacesuit in 1961 literally looked like a trash can with arms sticking out of it. It was really funny looking.
Yeah, it was the reverse of a deep sea diving suit.
Yeah, sort of like a reverse of that.
Yeah.
And come a long way, but not that far. And we've gone to the moon, and now the Chinese are going to go to the moon.
Yeah.
And
India is going to have, a satellite that is going to orbit and do all kinds of tests and stuff.
And take a lot of photographs.
This is another reason for, you might say, the event of themselves coming to declare themselves this great awakening, or in that what the what in Zechariah is written as the Lord God will come and all his holy ones with him, you know, that revealing.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially the ruler of the universe, the Lord thy God.
Well, we're almost at the end of our hour, and maybe we could say something about the water ozonator, which I've only had it in my life since the 4th of June, and it's remarkable. The people who have been getting that water in them is, it's really hard to really describe. How would you really describe how this has changed?
Well, there's you know, the idea, you can make ozonated water if you know in a commercial sense, or you can make it in a very small. But one of the things about the ozonator is its reliability. I think that it's got very interesting. It sort of put together a really cool unit. And I think it's not the cheapest unit out there. In fact, there's really cheap units out there that are probably really cheap in a sense that they don't serve you well. I've gotten used to it where I can just about, if I want to drink ozonated water, I can just drink ozonated water all day now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just my system is used to it. And initially, it had a shock in my system. It didn't like it for, you know, the first couple of days anyway. And essentially, my system was cleaning itself out with from all of those things that are running around in me. And
all that toxins
now,
that
huh?
All the toxins that have
toxins
been building up in your body,
as well as you know these other. Biological pests, you know, you might say.
Well, it's really a wonderful thing to have. We drink 2 glasses a day for sure.
Yeah, and that's what you want. You want to be able to generate it when you want it.
And
you have a good unit, it'll generate it when you want it.
And my,
you don't always have to be continuously having a spare running around just in case this one breaks.
My orchid plants are doing amazing, and this one orchid plant that is leaning on its side, it has 3 shoots coming out of it, so it's going to have a lot of flowers soon.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so it seems like anything alive loves that water. But it's not the water, it's like a lightning storm in a box. And so
there's probably other things besides ozone, because of the way you generate it. Field in the water changes water. You can even make water different. I'd like to see how it looks.
And I have posted now
frozen.
some information on Dr. Otto Warburg. Finally, I've been I talk about that for years, and now finally we have it on our website. And there goes our hour. I suppose it's time to say aloha, Michael, and we'll talk with you next time.
Okay, aloha.
All right, aloha. Bye.
Bye.